Hi, this is Chris Harris, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to episode 33 of series 5 of Cherry Jam. How was your weekend? I'll be honest, it's not been great, has it? This week's episode, myself, Ed Price, Russ Brooks, and James Eastwood, also known as Snowy. Not angry caller from the M40 this week.
That's someone else.
That was someone else, yeah, who just happened to have a very similar voice. Now, we've kind of made the executive decision to not talk about the game, really, because what's the fucking point?
I was coming on here to talk about the game.
Yeah, other than to literally just say Gloucester were defeated 90 in CFAC's world, that would be spelt 90-0, conceding 14 tries.
Yeah, but Ed, that's just the score. That's just a number.
Yes.
There's a bigger picture.
Yes. I mean,
yeah. Right. I mean, look.
I don't get why you're angry. I'm actually really happy with it. If anything,
do you know? Sometimes
you have to give a little to take a little.
Yes, it's true. Yeah.
I for one am delighted that we now hold the record for the biggest ever Premiership defeat. I mean, we're going places, guys.
Must. It's a record. It's a record.
I mean, yeah. It is so. And we got nailed. We didn't even feel the need to score because we're going places. Why bother doing anything?
We did try to score.
We want trophies and records, and we don't care what type of trophies and what type of records.
Yeah, we just want them.
Oh, God. Gallows humour is wonderful, isn't it? Now, as I said, there's very little point trying to sort of dissect the performance because it's just going to be talking about the number of times Gloucester went under the post, as in their own post, obviously. And there's literally no point in that. And one thing I would say is when you hear this podcast, we will be doing another podcast this week where we'll be interviewing Lewis Studlow. But that's a whole other story. Before we get to that point, one of the things we found quite interesting after the game was a number of excuses trotted out from supporters, from the coaching staff, and I think it's important that we kind of address those, and that's what we're going to try and do this evening. And then at the end of the pod, we'll just talk over some of the new law variations that are going to be brought in, just to clean the palate a little bit. Anyway, so let's just go through some of the excuses. Snowy, Russ, just add your opinions, add your thoughts as we go along on these. I've tried to sort of put them into general categories, and we'll go from there. So the first one, which is, I think, if we're going to have a legitimate, and I'm putting heavily inverted commas around legitimate here, that we are focused on the final. That's the excuse number one. That's the one that came out more and most than most on social media and across the coaching squad. We're focused on the final, and therefore, why worry about these league games when we're focused so much on the final?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, right, if you're a good team, I'll just pause there for a second. Then sometimes you have a run of really hard, intense games,
yeah,
and you've got a big match you've got to focus on. And sometimes you mix the squad up a bit, right? Because you've got to rest some key players and you've got to make sure those players are fit to perform in that cup final. It feels like we've been resting players for the last 2 months.
Yeah.
So I don't see from a fitness perspective why giving them less game time is going to equal a... So forget about whether we're a good team, not a good team, whether we should keep the coaching staff, all that stuff. It doesn't feel like our approach to this final is setting the team up in the best manner for the final, because we're not taking in a run of performances and playing to that standard that we want to play in the final. So it feels like no one has a clue what sort of team is going to turn up in that final and perform. Now, okay, I appreciate we've got Newcastle, and maybe we're going to use Newcastle to sort of blood that final team, but is that going to be beneficial? Look at with how bad Newcastle are, is that really going to if we do put out our final team or close to it in the Newcastle game, is that really going to help? I'm not sure.
For me, the key word, and we've talked about this a few times, the injuries, the selection, Ed, the need to play players like Hastings, who we felt needed game time. The key bit of snow is you rotate your squad a bit. You cannot make that amount of changes going into a game where we talked about this in the previous pod, where your worry is Northampton had to win this game. So they're not going to go easy on us. And that side, I mean, I was worried they'd go hard. I cannot tell you how scared I was when I saw that side. It is ridiculously good. And if there is any side not to take lightly and go, nah, stuff it, it is Northampton, who were just, they didn't let up, did they? I mean, most games a side will let up and you might get a couple of points back and get it a bit soft, which on reflection, I think is what happened against Saracens.
Yeah.
Rugby is a momentum-based sport. What is the feeling around the whole squad now? 90-0. Now, you can argue that we weren't expecting it to be that bad. I really hope we weren't. But there was always a risk. And the mood and the momentum in that squad is now shot to pieces. And like Snowy said, Newcastle, they've got to get something from that game now to get any kind of momentum back. Because if we lose that game, we're the only team Newcastle have beaten. It's the last home game of the season. So there's a lot, you've suddenly put a lot of pressure on a game that a few weeks ago was completely meaningless. Now it's got a little bit more on it. And now they might actually have to play a few more players than they were intending to. So for me, I can kind of see why you might hold players back, disregarding my feelings on how disrespectful and the contempt we've shown for the league and our fans. I can understand it. But the fact that we've gone so far the other way, we've put more pressure on ourselves and it's completely blown the logic of what we were trying to do out the water.
Yeah, well, just a sort of, not even devil's advocate here. So I think Sharks played a fairly strong side against Benetton Saturday, and they apparently had a few injuries that resulted from it. Now, that could happen in the first 10 minutes of the final, just because you might rest these players or you might protect them, wrap them up in cotton wool. It happens. Look, I think of all of the excuses that have been kind of paraded, there is a logic to it, but as Snowy and Russ have said, that logic is stretched to its absolute thinnest when you lose 90-0 and when you basically aren't, there's no continuity in the squad. So I would imagine very few of those players who played in the game yesterday, we're recording this on Sunday, very few of them are going to be involved in the first 15, or there's probably going to be a lot of them aren't even going to be in the 23. So, I mean, just on the injuries, because that's the other side of things, Snow. So the other kind of side of this argument is that we've got lots of injuries, and our squad is too shallow.
Yeah. And yeah, that's rubbish. We've got more asterisks than French children. So,
how long have you been building that one up
he's
for?
He's been holding that back for months.
I've heard people say as well that we don't have. Okay, they'll accept that we're spending to the cap, but we don't now. I'm sorry if I touch on some of your other excuses but that we don't have the infrastructure or the academy set up as some of the competition. But now I'm not deeply involved in the academy and everything, but from what I can tell, our academy is very well respected. It's really well set up. I don't think there's another team in the league that has brought so many young players through to the very top standard of Premiership rugby. Certainly,
probably Saracens is probably the only other one.
Yeah, Saracens is the only one I was thinking. And that's a bit different simply because of their catchment area. So that doesn't stack up. I think facilities, it doesn't stack up. We've invested a huge amount in facilities recently. Mm. The pitch is, okay, it's not my cup of tea, but it was bloody expensive and it's a top-notch facility, all-weather pitch. To directly answer your question about the quality of the squad, we pay up to the cap. We have a lot of academy players that are supposed to be top notch players for the future. I think we're pretty well balanced. Yes, of course, there's some positions where you're like, we need to improve those positions. We haven't got quite got the balance right. But I raised a point on social media the other day. A team that's getting battered week in, week out looks worse than it actually is in reality. You say that squad's weak, and it's because they're getting battered week in, week out. You don't see players play well. It's exactly the same as the flip side. If a team's winning all the time, those players look great. It could be the same player playing for a crap team, and suddenly he doesn't look so good. And that's why international players are often picked from the top sides. It doesn't make them a bad player just because they're playing for a bad team. It's just you look worse.
Well, a perfect example of that, and just to pick on somebody from yesterday, and Russ, I'll come to you in a second about another sort of side of this, which Snowy's already touched on, but Tom Seabrook. Tom Seabrook was a hardworking, squad player at Gloucester. He's had the best season of his career playing in an exciting, attractive, winning Northampton team.
There's so many average Gloucester players that if you put them in a Saracens or Northampton side, would look really good.
And it goes back to Snow. That goes back to that risk factor of resting everyone. You can't do that. You know, even we have done better. So Seb Blake, so come in. No one here is questioning how well Seb's done. Has Seb done better because he's playing with two established front row who know their trade when he comes in? Absolutely. He's a good second row who's come in, and it's made his life a lot easier. Same for Hathaway, who was being protected by having a few established players around him. Again, none of this is stuff that we're saying is any new, but you put 15 inexperienced players out and Lewis Ludlow.
Well, again, I think that's the thing, though. I mean, when we saw the side, I went back specifically, Russ, around, and it kind of goes back to that idea of squad is too shallow stuff. There were five internationals on the pitch on Saturday. You know, you had the Italian starting nine. You had a Fiji starting back row. You had Lewis Ludlow, who's an incredibly experienced player. You had Harry Elrington. You had Fraser Balmain.
Cooper's got. It has Premiership experience.
Jack Clements had a lot of games. The point I think is less about, and one thing we want to raise with Lewis Ludlow really on this is, it's less about the players that are in. It's the fact that none of them have played together. That's really the issue, is the fact that what they've done is we've just chucked in a load of. There are a lot of young players like Adelaide Jones and. Hillman Cooper and people like that and Rob Nixon, I think it is. I mean, but that's the other thing as well. I'll come on to some of the excuses we've heard.
So far then, so it doesn't make sense to rest players and our squad isn't too thin.
You all know that you're gonna maybe protect certain players more than others. So Zach Mercer, right? It would be Let's be honest, we'd all probably agree he's by far our best player in terms of his quality and standard within the squad. It would be lunacy to send him out this week and next week, 80 minutes both times with the final. Him being injured changes the dynamic entirely.
Yeah. And he's played a lot of games since he came back.
And he's played a lot of games. But what we're not saying like resting players is fine. We totally get that. But resting blocks of players
The other linked argument to that, I don't think you've got this one down your list, but is the whole money ball thing. It's like, look, let's step back. We do not need any points from this game. And if we put in our best side, we probably still wouldn't get any points from the game. Like the math says, don't bother doing anything. If you put it into AI, it would say, don't bother doing anything with the game. It's a complete waste of time. But there is an element of respect for the fans that have paid money to go there, for the club as a whole, for records, for history, for the fact that all these stats are held against those players for the rest of their lives. You know, this game happened. You didn't cancel it. You didn't not fulfill the fixture. It's like, rest a lot of players, but you have to at least fulfill your obligation as a member of the Premiership. If I was Saracens, look, it's quite funny, but if I was a Saris fan, I would be absolutely fuming at the standard of the side that we put out.
Mm.
I think for me, all of this is really good points. I don't want Moneyball is in my head as well. I'm going to come on to a point about that later when it's more relevant. The respect, the history, the pride, I probably will go into that more later because I'm trying really hard today not to be my ranty, sweary self and be really coherent and honest about how I feel so people can't throw that back at us given the stuff that's been thrown. For me, Snowy, you've made some really excellent points. And it also ties into the way the coaches approach and set up the game. You shared a picture from Rugby Pass where George Skivington has said, I'll be honest, we've pretty much switched off from Premiership.
Was it checked out? I think was the word he used. I can't remember if it was checked out.
Who sends that? Who puts that out there publicly? You might think that internally, but also what message does that send to the guys who were playing on Saturday? You might as well say to them, you boys are the fall of hope. You are the cannon fodder. We don't actually give a crap about this game. There's nothing you are going to do in this game. And then the point about we went for posts to not get nailed because we had no idea. He said we weren't doing anything to score. Imagine saying all that to the players. And then best of all, we didn't even kick the free, so we got nailed anyway. It's that message that goes with all that money ball, all the stats. If you are saying to the players, a game doesn't matter, how are you going to get your best out of their players? It's contempt and it's poor leadership. And it puts into those players' heads, you don't matter. And like you said, Snow, they're going to live with that for a long time. You've probably battered their confidence. They've got to pick themselves up and find a way to go again. And some of these players, if injuries happen, might end up playing in a final, having had their backsides handed to them in a situation they didn't have any chance to do anything but what happened, really.
Cynical me, and maybe I'm giving Skivington a bit too much respect by saying this, is that He is creating a narrative amongst quite a lot of people, a lot of fans, and potentially the club as well, that the cup is all or nothing. By doing this, by saying that the league doesn't matter anymore, we're giving it up, we're focusing on the cup 100%, and that it almost creates this story, and we're hearing it from quite a lot of people, that if we win the cup, it's a successful season. We've had a double cup winning season and the league doesn't matter. And mm-hmm. and if that narrative does play out, he has created a positive season from an absolute shambles of a season.
Yeah, and I mean, to
that,
be fair,
that's what I'm nervous about. I'm nervous that we win, and the club say, "Look, you've ticked your main KPI for the season, and you stay on for the next year." And the big picture that is an absolute shambles gets swept under the carpet, and we go into September again.
So there's a couple of things that we kind of touched on there. One of the other excuses was we would have got battered anyway, which I think we've kind of touched on the fact that how that isn't a legitimate excuse because of the reason of, if fundamentally it's a reason of, there's a respect of the competition, number one. It's the respect of the supporters and also the players. Look, you know, fundamentally what you've done is you've thrown a load of players under the bus here. Kind of tied to it again. We'll come on to the money in a minute because that's the sort of big one that often gets mentioned. There was one, someone said, oh, we've played and beaten weakened sides ourselves and you didn't mind then. Well, no, because I couldn't give a toss about other sides. That's an easy one, by the way. Whether Saracens rested all their players ahead of their semi-final in 2022 and whatever, don't care. That's not Gloucester. I'm talking about Gloucester. What other sides do and decide not to and whatever, that's entirely their lookout.
And every fan, just to add on that one, Ed, every fan would be in that situation. You know, I'm pretty sure there are lots of fans absolutely pissing themselves at this now. And they will know that we put a weakened side out. They will know everything behind it. They'll still find it really funny, and they'll be quite happy to.
I mean, it is inherently funny. I mean, we look at it. We look at it because we're pissed off because we're Gloucester fans. But there's plenty of stuff out there already this weekend, which is inherently funny. The fact that we sent the tea on 18-0 down
for the kick. The kick is our season in a minute.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, massive, massive credit to the lads who were caught on camera after Charlie Blessing missed a kick, who just were in hysterical laughter, because at that point, that's all you can do.
Yeah.
You know, it is just, as I said earlier, it's gallows humour at that point. It is just funny.
And that is sport, isn't it? We, you know, we come on to all the stuff about being kind, being nice. Sport is elation or deflation, isn't it? It's for anyone. And there has to be a winner. There has to be a loser. And that's the thing, isn't it? You take your lickings when you lose. You can be angry when you win. And any fan would be the same in this situation. Mm-hmm. So to me, that one doesn't hold any merit. You can't suddenly go, nah, it doesn't matter. It's 90-0.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be honest, if we were topped by 6 points with one game less to play, I wouldn't mind it if we chucked out a young academy side and got beaten.
We've done that. We've done it before.
But again, there is an element of context. But equally, though, I think we say that, but I would be... There's an element equally of when you're winning, often... and you're playing attractive rugby, which the winning teams generally do, you tend to get away with that sort of stuff.
Yeah, of course you do, yeah.
Because the whole ethos of the club, exactly. So it is a different thing. One other thing I would say as well is, to your point about Saracen supporters being pissed off, I would hold a little bit more water if we hadn't have done this at Saracens 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago, whenever it was. It's just that Saracens, unlike Northampton, just took the foot off the gas. And I think the warning signs were there then, as we kind of mentioned.
We have thrown multiple games now.
Yes. Just going back onto the money side of things. So you mentioned it earlier, this idea that we have no money, or that other teams have got lots of money, and that has somehow means that we are inherently handicapped. In our club's position, we can't rise any further. This is our lot.
Yeah, it's my second most annoying all of them.
Tedious.
Because firstly, who are these fans that seem to have this insight into our finances? Because whenever I try and dig a little bit deeper, they're not able to share anything that seems to prove that point. So if I look at what is actually out there, now we're losing less money than a lot of clubs.
Yeah.
Yes, you could extrapolate from that we're spending less, but I'm also hearing that we spend to the cap, and I'm seeing that we have a very good academy infrastructure and stadium. Now, I'm not sure what there is outside of that, apart from money available to hire new coaches. What else do you spend money on that impacts? Yes,
unless
okay.
We're
short back a house staff. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe the ticket office is a little bit understaffed.
We need a new tannoy system. But
I don't think we do. Actually, we did.
I'm joking, Ed. I'm joking, Ed. For me, I completely agree with Snowy. And there, you can nuance the salary cap stuff, and I'll come on to that in a minute. There's two elements to this. The club have said we are spending up to the salary cap. So we are either... So there's two elements to that from the owners. They're either telling the truth, and we are, and then no other club can spend more than the salary cap unless they are breaking the rules. And I'm not going to comment on if people think teams are cheating, so on, you can't do anything about that at the moment. And I don't think they are. I think it's a fairly level playing field for the reasons Snowy said before. I think the league is very close by our two teams.
To that as well is that I still genuinely think our squad is top six quality.
I'm not even getting into that bit yet. My argument is, if we're spending up to the cap, we're misusing that resource, kind of like you say, Snowy. So that's down to poor coaching, or the players aren't bothered or buying in or trying. And I'm not commenting either way.
Or we can't attract the right players, we're overpaying.
We can't attract the right players. Exactly. Ultimately, all of that stops with the team responsible for recruiting them. The counter is, if we're not spending up to the salary cap, we're being lied to. And that is a bigger problem.
You don't not spend up to the salary cap and bring in Zach Mercer.
Yeah. Or that, Santi
that, just, that logically makes no sense.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's so you, as soon as you say, yeah, you don't bring in Thomas Williams, you don't bring in Zach Mercer, you don't bring in Christian Wade, and you don't bring Gareth Anscombe in if you're not paying up to the cap. I mean,
and to add, Ed, Louis Rees-Sammet has gone on record as saying if he had stayed in rugby, he was going to sign with us. And I'm pretty sure that would have not been cheap. So that money would have come from somewhere. That money is still there somewhere. So that doesn't hold. The other one I find tedious about it is the argument that we have to pay more for players to attract them because we are not an attractive proposition. Because we are too low down in the league.
Vicious.
Yeah, there's a logic gap here, isn't there, Russ?
There's a logic gap. And then you go around the goldfish bowl, and I keep the other, so that's tedious. And then the people keep going, well, we always finish eighth or ninth.
That's the next bit. We've been crap for ages.
That's all right, then.
Yeah, we've been crap for ages.
We're not a big, I don't know if this is on your list, we're not a big club.
That's kind of, we've been crap, yeah, we've been crap for ages. We're not a big club. Yeah. Yeah, we're that's the other one.
And so just to tie on to this, because I know Snowy will have loads of points, this is where the Moneyball bit comes into me. That I just randomly watched the film on Monday, and there's a bit where Brad Pitt's character, when all the scouts are telling him how to do things, how it works, and I'm not an expert in baseball. I know you two like it. You can unpick that bit probably more. And Brad Pitt just goes, guys, we're doing something different, because we cannot compete with those teams. So for me, if we aren't good enough, let's try something different. Let's be novel. Maybe let's just try being higher up in the league. Let's try pushing the players and getting more out of them, like some of the other sides have. Let's turn our season around. Let's try and attract the players. Let's motivate them to do something different. Then you can start attracting players with Europe. You can start attracting them with all the other things. Let's just try not to be shit. It's a novel concept to sport. I've not seen anyone else try it, but I'm willing to get on board with it. And I don't understand when people say who supports a club and goes, well, we're always crap. Oh, there, I'm digging in for this. Let's be shit again this season.
I mean, there are.
But it's bizarre. Ed,
there's a lot of people who follow non-league football,
Ed,
mate.
Yeah, and all power to them. But I still think they will dream of doing the best they can within their confines. None of us here are saying overnight we expect us to walk the Premiership. What we're saying is we'd like us to be competitive. Being competitive and being the best side in the league is a very, very different proposition. I know this is a long journey. It's not going to be easy, but I'd just like to see some ambition on it rather than now we're not bothering with the league. It's only like 95% of the games you play every season. It's only what your club is established on. It's everything that attracts the club. So that's where we're focusing on Europe can get in the bin for me, because it can only take you so far.
Yeah. So just to sort of finish off on this, the last couple of excuses kind of wrapped all up here. Snowy, I know this is your favourite. So there's two here which are kind of linked. Well, Wasps fans, Worcester fans, Irish fans, they would have loved to have lost 90-0 on Saturday. They would have loved to have had a club to see lose 90-0 on Saturday. Stroke, we're focused on existing at the moment.
We just still want to be in existence in 10 years.
We want to be in existence in 10 years' time. Go ahead. So I know this is your favourite.
I mean, there's two sides to it. Firstly, is the fact that somehow the worse you perform, the more likely you are to be still surviving as a club in 15 years' time. There is just no link there. Secondly, is actually the complete flip side to that. It's like, if we actually started making sensible investment decisions or choices to be able to increase the performance of the team, you get more fans in the ground, you make more money, you get Champions Cup rugby, you get big fixtures that loads of people are watching, more people fill the pubs and buy drinks, and there's more money, and you can invest it in more players, and you're further up the league, and you can be more conservative with certain choices because you don't have to take as many risks, and the club is more likely to be to have survived in 10, 15 years' time. It's just literally absolute nonsense argument. And it's linked in. I don't think this was on your list because I just remembered it again, is that it's because of COVID.
No, I said about that. How much it triggers you, all of that, Snow. I 100% agree with everything on that. And before I come on to my thoughts,
it is well known that for those in Gloucester circles that only watch central news and don't realise that there is more beyond the Gloucestershire borders, that COVID only affected Gloucester.
You stole my joke, because I was going to say, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of conspiracy theories, like in terms of how they work, how they evolve.
Yeah, Russ is a 9/11 truther, guys.
All of that. But I've gone down 15 minute cities.
Well, the reason we missed that kick, the rabbit hole. It would have been 93 if the Earth was round. That just proves that.
It wasn't. Do you know what put him off? As he went to hit it, a vapor trail came over.
It was chemtrails.
Those bloody chemtrails. It caused a deviation in the Earth. The trajectory. The kick was taken. Serious, I've searched. I have not found a COVID conspiracy theory that it only happened in Gloucestershire. I just cannot find it. And unless I'm in the Matrix and it's engineered to keep me that way, it's just bollocks, isn't it? However you pick, every club was subjected by COVID. And we all, I think I remember on that podcast in that season, I pretty much remember the exact words when we were joking about not liking the kit. I think I literally said, buy it because the club needs the money. I don't think we're in that situation anymore. We have all acknowledged how hard it was under COVID, but it was hard for every club. Going back to that, the point about the financial success, and at least we've got a club. I don't have a ticket. I can't go this week because I'm away in Dorset running an event, which according to some of our fans is my problem. I don't have enough commitment to go and watch the club, et cetera, et cetera. Someone give me a compelling reason to go and buy a home ticket for a competition we openly say we don't care about.
Well, that's a really good point. It comes on to my point about this idea that, that we were focused on existing in 10 years' time. Snowy's very much touched on this. And there's four guys who sit behind me at King's Home who have been there, as far as I can remember, have been there since 2007. So when they built the new stand and everyone moved around and found their places and stuff, they've said they're not renewing next year. So that's four people. They're all they're not senior citizens, so they're all going to be paying roughly the same price I am, probably the same price, so about 50 quid a month if you're paying by debit over 12 months or 10 months, whatever it is, 50 quid a month over 12 months, and there's four of them and they're not renewing, so there's a hole. We know, we've all seen it. There's people on various social media forums and Shedweb and Facebook and Twitter have said, we're not renewing. I'm not going to renew. Why would I want to renew? I'm being treated with contempt as a supporter. I don't get any benefits from the season ticket. I can pick and choose my games because let's be honest, people aren't turning up to the big games. Bath wasn't a sellout, I don't think, this year for one of the first times in ever.
Challenge Cup games were poorly attended.
Yeah. Semi-final, we had 12,000, I think. I think the biggest crowd we've had this season, I think, I mean, I'm happy to be corrected here, was the final against Leicester. And there were deals and all sorts.
I have to take your word for it. And I think the other point, Ed, is away games. I love an away game trip. The contempt we treated those fans who went to Northampton.
Yeah.
And they had to watch through that. A fair play to them, because they have far stronger stomachs and resolve and passion, I'm sure, for the club to have even bothered going to that game than I could dare hope for.
Somebody said on Twitter about the fact that, if I'd seen that team announcement, I wouldn't have gone, almost blaming the supporters who went. Well, unfortunately, most people, when they buy their tickets months and months in advance.
And I saw a tweet.
So that's a waste of a 50 quid then, isn't it?
Someone had bought their dad a ticket to that game for their birthday. Imagine that as your birthday present. I think I'll be honest. If someone offered me that as a birthday present, I'd rather they just punch me in the face and break my nose there and then.
I saw that bloke tweet. He's bought a Northampton season ticket.
Why wouldn't you? And, but that,
and, yeah, love and, that. That's good.
That, but that goes, and all joking apart, that goes to a serious point, Ed. We have, because we haven't even talked about the game plan, etc., because it probably isn't relevant to the excuses. We have talked that to death. You have made this point countless times. If we are not, if we truly recognise we are not competitive, as in we are not going to win the league, we're not going to be in the top four, fair enough if you own that. Can then we just play some good rugby so that when we go along, it's kind of enjoyable because that will entice people to come along as well?
Like, it's like it closes the circle on what we said at the beginning. It's like, yeah, momentum. Like if Saracens or Northampton were going into a final in 2 weeks' time, you'd expect they're going to be absolutely firing. But they're not. They're not throwing games in the Premiership.
No.
And so it doesn't make sense. We're not good enough to be in that position. We haven't built consistency and a style of play and everything. So it just makes no sense. And it comes back to my conspiracy that I think it's just a right. I'm not going to take any risks on injuries. I'm happy to put my career into this one game. If it works out, it works out. And I've ticked my contract KPI. And if it doesn't, then so be it.
I mean, just a quick sort of note on this. So the rumours, again, as always, you kind of take some of this with a pinch of salt. The rumours are that there is 1 year left on George Skivington's deal.
Yeah, I heard that as well.
So if there's only 1 year left and the club are basically saying, do you know what? We can live with it. And then you never know, next year might, by a miracle upon miracles, turn around. That's the gamble they can take. But
if we lose the final, there is absolutely no way in at all that Skivington is there next season.
That
absolutely, I would put my mortgage on it. It's untenable. The reaction reaction from the fans.
Yeah,
you wouldn't have any season tickets for next year. Old but Marjorie really, who says, don't hurt the players' feelings with your negativity.
Be kind. Do you know what? This all ties into you. I think the one point we haven't touched on, and the one that annoys me quite a lot, is if you get like, because we took a hammering for saying Skivington's out, should go. And one of the arguments I had, which really made my head hurt, the one that makes my head hurt the most, is people going, you shouldn't sack him because he's not the only problem in the club. It goes beyond that. It goes into the owners. I would love, I mean, Snowy won 93 quid on the lottery. I mean, we might be able to buy the club at that one. 93, you know, we can't, no one can buy the club. There's not the money there.
Not even me with my £93.
Yeah, exactly.
God damn it.
If we talk about realism, what is more realistic? Someone comes in and buys a club and turns the other bits around. If our owners are a problem, that is a really big, really difficult thing to turn around. No one is getting away from that. I don't know. I don't know the ins and outs of all of that. But the analogy I tried to use is, if you cannot afford to buy a new car, you do what you can to make the car you've got serviceable and usable, or you run it into the ground until the engine falls out and it's worthless, and you're in a situation where you still need a new car, but you have no way of, you're even worse off, if that analogy makes sense. So for me, you can't just do nothing. Doing nothing is the worst possible thing for me. And I don't know if sacking Skivington is the best thing, but at the moment, something has to change. And by just going, well, there's a problem further up there, you kind of still have to tackle that that problem. I'm rambling a lot. I'm not sure.
At the end of the day, that's the sort of final one, which kind of was referenced a few times, that that Alex Brown or the owner, you know, Mance and Quinton are directly responsible for the mess we're in. I think the only argument you could make to that, sort of around that, is that you could say that if they haven't put relevant contract clauses in that allowed you to terminate a contract early, yeah, that's a fair enough assessment. Yeah. Now, I would say that I don't believe that Alex Brown was in the position. No, he wouldn't. I think Lance Bradley would have been the chief executive when George Skington got his contract extension, I think. So, look, we all at the time, when sort of what we believe the contract extension happened, or if there was even a contract extension, but when George Skington was appointed, everyone, and I mean everyone, whether we kind of thought he's a bit inexperienced, or that there were maybe better candidates out there, we all genuinely gave him probably more leniency and more time than a lot of other coaches. You know, we had severe doubts pretty early on around some of the start of rugby, some of the decisions around selections, some of the post-match comments, and the way that certain excuses were being trotted out. We genuinely, and I know people may find this difficult to believe, but we genuinely would love to eat humble pie. If George Skivington, as it seems almost certain, despite what some people think our power may be within the supporters group, which is bizarre in itself, he's almost certainly going to be there next year, regardless of what happens in the final. Probably. I mean, let's be honest about this. If you win the final, absolutely will 100% be there next year. If, by miracle upon miracles, this time next season we're in the top four and we're in a playoff to get into the Premiership final and win it, I'm be more than happy to go say, you know what, we got it wrong. And that is fine, because we genuinely don't care about being wrong, but what we do care about is what's best for Gloucester. And at the moment, the best thing for Gloucester, in our opinion, and has been for some time, has been that George Skivington has kind of run out of road. There isn't really a way back at this point. If we lose the final, I think, Russ, you're going to jump in here. There isn't really a lot that can be said.
And let's be honest, of all the excuses, and we're almost going full circle here to, you know, we had to protect our players for this final. It's not a give me final. It's not a given. I've seen people say that Sharks team is not a good team, that South African fans won't turn up for them. They are pretty much South Africa A.
There are a lot of very good players in that team.
There are some very good players in that team. It is not an easy ask. And I hope to God, I have seen people say, and people in this pod have said, they almost want us to lose, so that Skivs will get sacked. I think whatever happens, that's not going to happen. I agree with you, Ed. It doesn't mean I don't want that to happen, because I genuinely believe it is the best will of the club long term. But I'll be delighted if we win. And that one has annoyed me the most, of people saying we can't enjoy this final because of what we believe. We can. We are fans. We have all had season tickets throughout our lives at different periods. I literally couldn't do anything else that day. I wasn't at the game, but I was so angry seeing the score ticking over. We get angry because we care. Our opinion is as valid as anyone else's. And to be called out until we're wrong, fair enough, that's what you believe. But ultimately, we are the same as anyone else in this who supports this club. We love it. We want to see it succeed. And I don't like calling for coaches' heads. I don't like speaking out about it. I genuinely believe we've always been respectful. It's never been personal. I can hand on heart have never personally criticised the coaching team, to the best of my knowledge. If someone finds something out there, I'll own it and apologise. It was in the heat of the moment. we're about. We are about what's best for the club. And people like, if you are director of rugby, you have to own that. That's a risk element of the job. And yeah, we, you know, I just want what's best for Gloucester. And actually, I genuinely do believe winning that tournament is what's best for us. So I really hope we do win it.
Yeah.
But I just, and like you said, Ed, what I want, and you know, what I would come away from this year happy with, is if we win that, and then an honest endeavour and promise and commitment to say, we are aiming to focus on the league next year. That's where, for me, that's where we need to go. And my ask next year, make King's Home a fortress again. Make it a horrible bear pit that you come to, you don't fancy your chances of winning. And let's see where we are then. That's all I'm asking for. And I don't think that's an unrealistic ask when you consider all the excuses and all the other issues. That can be done. And I will stand by that.
I think it's a totally legitimate thing to say that whoever the head coach is next year, whether it's George Skivington or anybody else, I don't think there will be a single supporter who would be frustrated should they come out and immediately say, we are not going to take seriously Europe. We are not going to take seriously the Premiership Cup. We are focused entirely on the league. Any wins we get in those other competitions, yeah, we'll go for it, or we'll certainly go for it when we're at home. But from our point of view, the focus is the league. That's what we're going to go for. That's the sort of the aim of the club. I think on the basis that you've thrown the league this year, I think it's only right that you throw the cups next year would be my thought. Although, you know, genuinely, actually, what we are is that we are a professional, Gloucester Rugby are a professional sports team. They should go into every game wanting to win. And I think it's accepting anything, and accepting anything other than that just feels wrong. And that's the problem.
And I think the thing we haven't touched on, are we a big club or not? I don't know. I don't think we can answer that question. I don't know. There's so many different variables, so many different permutations, so many ways of defining that. What we are is a club with a strong, passionate fan base with a real, genuine history. And we haven't touched. We, as a pod, have stood our ground, been consistent in our views openly. And hands up, I wasn't expecting to get the hammering we did from fans. Fair play, that's your right. You want to be angry? You might want to be angry with us. I get that. But I've seen a lot of tweets from players and people in that club with a lot more credibility and a lot more history and knowledge of what it is at the top level come out and express the same concern about the way we've treated the league. To me, that speaks volumes. Gloucester should not now or ever be a team that treats the Premiership with contempt. And that's the thing that makes me most angry at the moment is the history element. And I'm trying not to get angry or too worked up. I spend a lot of my time in life missing my dad, who was the biggest Gloucester fan I've ever known. I spend a lot of time wishing he was alive to see events. And I hope to God, when we're in Spurs, I'm in that situation. This weekend, when I saw that score, I was just thinking, I'm glad he didn't have to see that, because I know how much it would have hurt him. And that's a horrible feeling all around. And that I hope gives people a strong indication of how we feel. And I'm not the only one who feels like that, you know. I know how much difference Loz cares. I know how much Jim cares, and I know how much Hayden Loz cares, and I know how much you care, Ed.
Russ, is that people can be upset with performances and defeats, and we can kind of all, to a point, deal with that and the disappointment of sport and all the rest of it. That's fine. Yeah. Like you lose games. You're a supporter of a club for long enough, you'll lose, get plenty of games, and you get beaten heavily. The difference was this weekend, it was an embarrassment. And where I think some people have kind of misunderstood the anger is the anger is embarrassment. It's not we lost a game. It's the fact that this isn't just about one game. It's not about one season. It's about 150 years. And this is the worst league defeat. It's, I think it possibly is the worst ever defeat to Gloucester have ever suffered, which is saying something in 150 years. You want in your 150 years to hit some records? Well, we've done it, boys and girls. And to save any more upset and anger, I think probably best to end that part of the pod now, because we're going to talk about some law changes that are going to come in next season. But I'd like to really thank Russ and Snowy, who's had to just drop off because newborn baby stuff, for their time for this part of the pod. It's been, again, remarkably cathartic, which I think is unfortunately a common theme these days. But hopefully it's been cathartic to you. Hopefully you kind of, if nothing else, you might have been screaming at your radio or your podcast provider and saying you don't know what you're doing. Perfectly entitled to, guys, and we really appreciate anyone who's listening, whether you agree to with us or not. We certainly don't think we talk for supporters, and anyone who'd like to give us any feedback, please do, but please keep it civil. Please keep it within how you would like to be spoken to, and we'll be very happy to chat to you.
Hi, this is Santi Dossino, and you're listening to the Cherry Jam podcast.
Okay, so something a little bit different now after that rather heavy bit of the pod. So the World Rugby announced introducing some new laws and trialing six more starting from next season. A couple of them have been kind of spoken about before, one of which is 20-minute red cards, shot clocks for scrums and lineouts also to be trialed, which is going to be interesting. I think that's at the lower age of the lower ages though. And then you're not able to now call for a free kick from a scrum, or call a scrum from a free kick, I should say. I think it's going to be interesting, Russ. Certainly that one around the free kicks at scrum time, is you are a former prop. Your feelings on that?
In principle, I think it's a good one, because free kick at scrums, quite often teams will call a scrum again, and it doesn't really change anything. It's to me, that one's neither here nor there. I think the scrum often takes a lot of the blame for what slows the game down, and I don't think it's the only culprit. And I think sometimes it misses the bigger picture of rugby's meant to be a game for everyone. And some of these law changes benefit just professionalism over amateurism. That's a whole other topic. For me, on paper, I don't really have a big issue with that one.
I think the thing with the people immediately, the first thing that came out was all the former props who are in television and journalism now came out and said, so what you're basically doing is you're going to reward a side who hasn't got a particularly strong scrum. They'll give away a free kick, and that team who's got a dominant scrum won't be able to benefit. And I can see that. I can definitely see that that's a potential worry. What I think probably will happen, because these things tend to balance out pretty quickly, is that referees will just not give free kicks. And you might see a few more, you'll just see more resets, and then you'll see more penalties.
And yeah, I think what you'll get, Ed, is like almost a penalty for persistency. Hopefully, like you said, the common sense, you've given away free kicks, arms up, now it's a penalty, stop it, get on with the game. That would be what you would hope. But then that comes on to, and this is a wider point about law issues, we need to sort out the consistency of interpretation. That's the biggest issue for me, because week on week, and I understand it to a point, every referee refs a game differently, and you have to change and chop and adapt to that. I just think we need that more consistency of approach that will make it easier so the players know what, and the coaches know what's going on that week, you know. And the scrum is the biggest lottery of that, isn't it? I mean, the amount of times 1 week a prop can be doing what he's doing, one ref lets it go, and then suddenly the next ref is like, nope, that's hinging, nope, you're not supporting your body weight, and that prop's going to be like, well, it was fine last week. And then, you know, that's the issue for me, is it just ref it consistently.
I think my personal preference, and this is coming from a back, so you can take it with a pinch of salt, all those forwards who are listening and again screaming at your radios, etc. But my personal preference is that really the scrum is just designed as a quick and efficient way of restarting the game. What it has developed into is a weapon of getting penalties. Now, and this was never the case back in the day. When we talk about dominant scrums from sort of the 80s or 70s, the dominance came from the fact that you would tire opposition teams out, you would be able to retain the ball in the back of the scrum and lock in those defenders, so you'd have more time with for the backs. I think any referee that kind of encourages, basically, which is kind of what Luke Pearce, Wayne Barnes have done, which is if the ball's at the back of the scrum, regardless of what's going on at the front, unless it's dangerous, we play. And I think really the referees and World Rugby really just need to encourage, as soon as the ball's at the back of the scrum, we just get on with the game. Not this continuous sort of focus on trying to kill the opposition tight head to wean a penalty out of it. It doesn't make the game any more exciting. Again, hands up. This is a backs view. I totally understand if you're a front row forward and you think I'm an idiot. Plenty of people have this week, but just that's just my sort of view on it. The other big change, which will hopefully reduce some of the issues around the kick tennis, which is the now changing the law almost back to what it used to be, which is where on kicks. It would no longer be possible for a player to be put on side when an opponent catches the ball and either runs 5 meters or passes the ball. So the assumption there is that the kicker will either have to put the team on side, excuse me, or the period of time before, so the players have to retreat no matter what. So you have to retreat 5-10 meters or however many meters you want to make it. That sounds a sensible change, because we've seen it this season where it's just gone a bit crazy, where basically you just end up with 30 kicks in a row and the forwards in the middle of the pitch are just watching it like a game of tennis.
Yeah, it is. It's the biggest problem in rugby, isn't it? Is how you work that out with the people just standing there watching and doing nothing. And I you know, anything that will make that an improvement and more of a spectacle, I think we're all in favour of.
Yeah, it's always a difficult thing, because every time they change the law, the coaches will look to find the nuance and the gaps and take advantage of them.
That's how the Caterpillar started in the first place, wasn't it? With the ball at the back, and it's just hard to evolve. It's how teams deal with it, and you know. To be honest, I mean, I'm a purely selfish mode as a Gloucester fan. Anything that stops us having, like, negating the box kick and making us involve our game, I'm all in favour of, to be honest, because, it's like watching paint dry, isn't it? I don't think anyone watches or loves rugby, and I'm happily accept, and thinks, I can't wait to watch this box kick. I love watching a good touch finder and seeing the nuances of kicking a team into the corner and putting them under pressure. I can get on board with that. The endless tennis of trying to position people is just tedious. And yeah, something needs to be done to improve that. And we'll see if these changes do that or not.
Yeah, again, that's more really about the 5-second rule. So it's almost enforcing the laws rather than else. So they banned the crocodile roll.
Yeah, again, which, 100%.
Again, I'm pretty sure was banned anyway, but they banned the crocodile roll. It's saying they're going to enforce the 5-second rule on the box kicks to stop the caterpillar. Go on, sorry.
Being glib, the law change I'd like is, if you're a Gloucester fan, and we'd have to go back in time for this, do you remember how when Ollie Azam wanted to come on the pitch, you'd just see him pace up, down, up, down. And you're going to have to find some technology here to close. So find a lot of angry players, and the law changes. If you take 5 seconds, he's allowed to come off the touchline and clatter you. So it's up to you. Kick it, or Ollie Azam is legitimately, you know, the offside line's gone. And I mean, that's an interesting one. I don't know if you do it safely. Being serious, 5 seconds, if you don't kick it,
well, the ball instead is out. Of a
ball is out.
Well, I mean, that is the law. It's could just you the imagine?
Wall. Yeah. I'd just like to see that. Because I know for a fact, if I'm a nine, I'm Jim Harley, who, you know, because I quite like to see Jim get smashed when he runs his mouth sometimes. I've played on his side and he's annoyed the hell out of me. Annoyed. Can you imagine you're someone Jim's side? And you've got to kick it in X amount of time, and it's Courtney Lawrence is on opposite you, and he has got you lined up and banged to rights. I'm getting rid of that ball as quick as I can. I'm joking, but that to me is that what I'd like to see is, like you say, Ed, just enforce the laws before some Norse gets on at me.
Yes, yeah. So that's that one. The other one I'm intrigued about is the 20-minute red card, because I don't think the theory is that the 20-minute red card has been brought in to sort of stop New Zealand teams getting sent or have like ended up with 12 players because they just inherently can't drop the tackle height. Now, what's interesting, again, if you notice, funnily enough, after 2 or 3 seasons of lots of red cards because teams weren't dropping their tackle height, how few red cards we've had for head contact. Comparatively, over the last few seasons, how few red cards we've seen for high tackles. Because, funnily enough, everyone's dropped their tackle height. And I do think this law, the change around the 20-minute red card, so basically is, if you're red carded, that player stays off. But after 20 minutes, you can bring a replacement on. So you're punishing the player, not the team. Now, I just, to me, it seems like after the horse is bolted, we've kind of sorted the problem in a way. I don't really see the need for it anymore.
It doesn't, this one doesn't sit well for me for a number of reasons. You've articulated that point, and I hadn't thought of that, Ed, and I think you're right. Because of the serious ramifications of it, like if you get it wrong, you're off for the whole game. That, for me, is the biggest deterrent for it, and I don't see the value in changing that now, because you're saying like 20 minutes. I get bored of, we've talked earlier about argument supports, the oh, that's the game is over because of a red card. I find really tedious, because that's exactly the point. That's the whole point of a red card. It's to deter you and make you really think and change about it. And it's because of the seriousness of the ramifications. It's like, if I get this wrong, it's not me I'm letting down ultimately. It's the 14 blokes who have to go out there and kill themselves, particularly if it's early in the game. Mm. We've seen it a lot of times. Like, I cannot imagine. This is my Gary Lineker moment. I never had a red card. I never had a yellow card playing rugby, probably because I'm so old and so crap. I couldn't tackle, so it was never a danger of me going high. And I predated for a large part of my career yellow cards. But I cannot imagine how hard it is as a player to have to go into a dressing room afterwards and look your teammates in the eye and go, yeah, sorry, boys, I cost us that game. That is the thing that always holds players to account. So I don't like the idea of devaluing the red card.
It's a reaction to a change in the law around tackle height and head injuries, quite rightly, and a significant jump in the number of red cards we were seeing during games. Red cards were very rare. Again, you have to remember context and everything. Red cards, incredibly rare. They normally only happened for serious pieces of foul play, like knocking out Paul Ackford, for example, for those people who remember that. They were incredibly, incredibly rare moments. We were seeing over the last couple of years a red card normally every week, which probably was too far the other way. This is, I think, what's happened is the players, the coaches, the whole system has changed its way around tackles and tackle heights. There's an acceptance we have to get that right because it's the future of the game fundamentally. It just seems a strange one, really. I don't really understand it. Go on.
I was going to say, the one I've seen that is the cynical view is, what's to stop players murdering someone, like a key player, and then knowing 20 minutes that's going back? I don't believe you would see that at a professional level, amateur level. Who knows? And this is the thing. How do you enforce all of this at an amateur level? This is always the disconnect, isn't it? And I do buy into the frustration a lot of people get, where it's like professional and amateur is so different. These laws make it so hard and are so hard to enforce at the amateur level. And that's the concern. It's yet more frustrations at a lower league level. But
yeah, I haven't seen the specifics around how it's going to be brought down, or if it is going to be brought down to amateur level. Mainly because you look at the club level that we were playing at when we were playing, it was rotating subs and all the rest of it. So it was a bit, all of this sort of stuff is going to probably be a very difficult thing to enforce. But I believe on the point around what's to stop a professional player going in and knocking somebody out, etc. I do believe that the sanctions are tied to the offence. So there are certain offences, like serious foul play is just a red card no matter what. That continues. But I think it's really around the head height, tackle height stuff, the borderline ones where they were being sent to the bunker and all this sort of. I think that's the sort of kind of concept around it. But again, to me, it just seems a bit horse after, after the horse is bolted type thing. The other two things just to kind of touch on, which are the things that they're looking and trialing, is around the shot clocks for scrum and line-out. Line-out, not a problem. I think that's fair enough. I think getting getting that sped up is a good thing. The scrum's an interesting one, though, because it kind of goes back to the first point, because the whole issue around why it takes so long for the scrum to be set up is safety. And then you're saying, well, there's going to be a 30-second or a 60-second time clock to get a scrum 30 seconds to set a scrum. That seems counterintuitive and counteractive if you're thinking about safety. So I unless there's a really quick way of going to get everybody set and all the rest of it, I think that's going to be a difficult one to enforce. The shot clock for a conversion, looking to reduce that from 90 seconds to 60 seconds, that brings it in line with the penalties, which is entirely right. It shouldn't take 90 seconds to take a fucking conversion, bearing in mind you're normally pretty close to the post. I would actually even say that conversions, it should be 30 seconds personally. I don't see why it needs to be that long. We need to get that sorted pretty quickly. The final one, which was players will be able to mark the ball inside their own 22 from a restart. So that would encourage short restarts and discourage caterpillar rucks. That's the idea.
But the only thing that makes me laugh about that one, Ed, is still a breaking play, still slows the game down. But you got to try something, haven't you? I do understand,
It's a weird one, that one. I don't really see the benefit overall. I mean, look, the whole point is you should be like, it's the whole thing around. There's a little bit too much tinkering, I think. I think sometimes you've got to let stuff bed in and develop. And if you change too many things at the same time, there's always that potential that it could just become a bit of a mess. But we'll see. I mean, I think there's some. I certainly think the change of the kick rule around getting onside, that should help, because it should, in theory, open up the play because players are going to have to retreat. It probably will encourage people not to kick as often. And then the only one I think will be interesting to see how it works, whether it's a good or bad thing, we don't know at this point, but the one is the scrum At scrums, any free kicks, you can't then opt for another scrum. Not so much of an issue when you're 5 meters out, but when you're on your own 22, that could be an interesting experience and see what they'll do there. So anyway, what we'll see, we'll save that all for another week once we're back up and running. Thank you very much, Russ. Thank you again to Snowy, as I said, who joined us earlier. This podcast will be followed later on this week with another special podcast, which is an interview with Lewis Ludlow, where we're going to ask him some tough questions, and we're going to ask him some questions which are slightly friendlier, and hopefully there'll be a good bit of insight into what it takes and what it means to captain the club that we all love. Thank you very much, Russ. Speak soon.
Cheers, boys.